Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're going to spend the next part of the show talking more about food, but this time also about identity. Culinary historian Michael Twitty has made it his personal mission to explore the intimate connections between food and race in America by diving deeply into his own family history, from enslavement to freedom and from Africa to the Old South of America. Because this concept of Southern food, it's essential to the American tradition of and American cuisine. But there's a really important question here. Who does that tradition belong to? And how can food bring about cultural understanding and even healing? Well, Michael Twitty's James Beard award-winning memoir is called The Cooking Gene, A Journey Through African-American Culinary History in the Old South. He's in town now as the scholar-in-residence at the Jewish Arts Collaborative, and he joins me now in the studio. Michael Twitty, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much.
It's a real pleasure to have you here, and there's so much to talk about, but I was just wondering if we could actually just start by giving folks a little sense of how and what you write in the book, and I was wondering if you could just read an excerpt from it.
Sure. I dare to believe all Southerners are a family. We are not merely Native, European, and African. We are Middle Eastern and South Asian and East Asian and Latin American now. We are a dysfunctional family, but we are still a family. We are unwitting inheritors of a story with many sins that bears the fruit of the possibility of 10 times the redemption. One way is through reconnection with the culinary culture of the enslaved, our common ancestors, and restoring their names on the roots of the Southern tree and the table those roots support. The Old South is where I cook. The Old South is a place where food tells me where I am. The Old South is a place where food tells me who I am. The Old South is where food tells me where we have been. The Old South is where the story of our food might just tell us where America is going. The Old South with soul food in its mouth. And I, who am African American, must know her.
That's Michael Twitty reading from his book, The Cooking Gene, A Journey Through African American Culinary History in the Old South. I wanted to have you start our conversation by reading that, because when I look at that, I hear you talking about the Old South, which is a place in time. It's a geographical place, but it's also a place in the soul. So when you say Old South, what do you mean?
Well, first, you know, you kind of triggered me by having me reading that, because I was like, okay, it brought me back to like when I did the book for like Audible and I had to do that for 7 days. Yeah. Same time it took the Lord to make the world. You know, hearing my own voice now reading the book, I'm like, oh my God, I'm back to doing it.
Well, you did a great job.
Oh, thank you. But no, the Old South is pejorative if you're black, and rightly so. It's like saying, you know, the grand golden days of the British Empire in India. It's like, what? You know, the great old West, huh? So to us, it's also a place of cultural memory that is painful. And it's like an act of reclamation. It's kind of like inward reclamation to me. Because the Old South is a place where we imagine that the black man and woman are disempowered unless they are there to serve white folks. And so for me, that Old South image, which is still embedded in our food culture, embedded in the popular image of the South, is also the image I have to like hug to death.
Yeah.
And I literally mean that. I mean, take it, hug it, and then there's no life in it until the only meaning it has is what I give it to it as a descendant of the people who supported that institution.
So tell me more about how that, you said it's embedded in our food culture still to this day. Tell me more about that.
What's the biggest fast food brand in the world? Yum Brands. What's their biggest, who's their lead business? Kentucky Fried Chicken. Colonel Harlan Sanders was from Indiana. So why is he dressing up like a Southern plantation owner? Why did he leave that legacy after his passing to us as the idea of him in a white suit with a black bow tie as the Kentucky Colonel? That's deep. We still have Aunt Jemima. We still have Uncle Ben. We still have the Cream of Wheat Man. We still have these embedded images of the power imbalance in the Old South based on food. The context is still there, but the material is there, but the context isn't. And so for me, a part of reapproaching our tradition was breaking down that wall, going, okay, this is not the reality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you do that? How did you try to break down that wall?
First, you know, you ask questions. You ask, where do I come from? A lot of people don't know the African-American story as well as they think they do. You know, the playwright, award-winning playwright George C. Wolfe, you know, had an amazing opening scene to his play The Colored Museum, where he has enslaved people come on a plane from Africa, and it's a slave ship plane. And the crew, the plane director says, the stewardess says, I'm going to hand you some basketballs. You're going to become millionaires after you sing some songs for 300 years. And that is a stereotype of Black history. Whereas for me, when I'm writing this book and I'm talking about food, it's kind of like our ancestor now, Anthony Bourdain, mm-hmm. who challenged us to see beyond just the food and see the people, the culture, their passions, their politics, their issues. And it's like, well, I have to go back to where my people came from. Who are my people? Who are my people? Native, European, African, Asian, etc. Where did they come from? Why did they come from there? What did they eat? What did they bring to the table? And also, can I trace? Can I be the Alex Haley of our food tradition and trace where those dishes and where those ideas came from that became Southern food, that became soul food?
Yeah. Well, so you say in your book that you wanted to have a confrontation
yes.
with the quarter of a white man lurking in your body.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Because that's what it is. I think most people don't realize when you look at an African-American person, especially someone like me, medium brown to darker, you don't see the layers of multi-ethnicity there. Whereas there are other African-American folks and other people from the African diaspora where it's plain and evident mm-hmm. that mixture has taken place. And so for me, I got tired of people putting me in that one box. Like this book is about celebrating my African heritage. And of course, the paperback will have me going to the continent, which is great, fantastic. Happened after the book came out, though. But it's more important than that. I just really want to confront the European part of my heritage, and also take claim of ownership of that part of who I am, and tell people, you know, I've always wanted to walk in the St. Patrick's Day parade. You know why? Because guess what? There's a lot of us Black folks. You hear that, Boston? A lot of us Black folks who are part Irish and Scots Irish. That's the reality of early American history, and it's a legacy, and Caribbean people as well. So we are a mixed multitude. And if we are family to you, if we are all family, no matter what region we come from, where we come from the world, then we should change the tone and tenor of our dialogue with each other.
Mm-hmm. So there's so much to talk to you about. I'm trying to tame my mind here a little bit. But, I mean, you go to the Oak Forest Plantation, or the site of the Oak Forest
yes.
Plantation in Nash County, North Carolina,
yep.
in part of this effort to confront.
The Southern Discomfort Tour.
What did you find there?
Well, I found the big house. I found the offices. One thing I didn't, the kitchen was in ruins, but I saw where the kitchen was. I saw about how big the kitchen would have been. It was pretty astounding. I was confronted with the grave of my white fifth great-grandfather, who was born during the Revolution and died during the beginning of the height of the antebellum South. And it was his grandson that fathered my great-great-grandmother in Alabama. So I was actually looking at this plantation, and by the way, it's still surrounded by cotton and tobacco fields. It's mm-hmm. like the whole image is there. It's very haunting. And I didn't know how to feel. I didn't know how to feel towards this man. And one of the things about that part of the book is, based on his probate record, which was amazing. I mean, he had steak plates and waffle irons and the beaten biscuit breaker and all these. For me, as a culinary person, it's like wild. Like, not only was he wealthy, but he had a very well-stocked. He obviously liked to eat. And I said, well, that's the genetic connection right there, right? But beyond that, I started extracting, like, these ingredients from his probate record. Because, you know, food was a part of that. He actually bought rice, homegrown rice, from an African-American man who may have been free called Luke and brought onions from him. And I'm thinking, oh, well, so they would have had rice with onion gravy, and they would have had ham, and they would have had turkey, and they would have had fried chicken and waffles, and they would have had apples and brandy and peaches. And I went to, wait a minute, you would never have been allowed to eat with your own fifth great grandfather. You wouldn't have had that power, that ability to define your reality in those terms at that time. And that is the conundrum that we face when we confront our history.
Yeah. I was just wondering about that, because you're right. Like, every item that you just described, that would have been what the slave owners would have been eating.
But a black woman would have been cooking it.
Right. So tell me more about that. You said your great-grandmother? I want to be sure I get this right.
Yes, great.
So she was an enslaved woman. Do you know more about her, what she was doing there?
So she was born during the Civil War. A couple of years ago, I actually was able to find through one of the DNA sites our distant cousins, who were also African-American. Well, apparently he only had black children. One in Texas, one in Alabama. So we had a 150-year-old reunion in process. I actually went to Texas and met them and met my cousin. And the DNA was on point with our oral history. He was their great-grandfather, our great-great-great-grandfather. And so it was kind of bizarre. But it was also very true to the reality of the quote-unquote Old South. And there's a food connection always with this, because this was a man who was raised in the cooking of African-American people. The kitchen, as I always say, was a place of trigger and trauma, because the kitchen in the Old South was an offshoot building. So, you know, I do this for a living. I actually go and demonstrate and cook this way and cook in the tradition of 18th and 19th century enslaved people and free people of color. It's very important people understand that. It wasn't just enslaved people innovating this early American cooking. And I just think about what that meant when you could, like, lock that door. And no one would know anything until, of course, gestation happens, birth happens, and there's a child that looks just like the man in that big house. And in my family, it's a frequent story. That's how I got to that quarter weight man. And it was through the kitchen. It was through those enslaved people who worked in the house. And it's led to me, you know, on my journey, I didn't take that lightly. It was one of the first times when I actually had the experience of breaking down emotionally and, you know, having a serious confrontation with the blood in my own veins. But I don't say this to discourage connection, because one of the things I have to tell you is that for a lot of the people who I outreach to who are white, who are the descendants of these people or collateral descendants, they were actually very willing to help me with my journey and tell me whatever they knew. A little bit wary, a little bit scared at what I might say or think. But I came to them with the attitude of the African-American identity is like a mosaic with so many missing parts. Just by giving us a little bit of our past back is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you tell me a little bit more about, you know, like you said, cooking the food.
Yeah.
Because I completely hear you when you say, like, it was a emotional experience that breaks you down, because food can do that, right? It just, it connects us in this profound sort of almost atavistic way, because it's so primal, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so tell me more about what it was like to, like, recreate these recipes and using the ingredients that you're, like, reaching back in time and touching your ancestors.
Yeah, right? And you're going there and you're these heavy pots with the water and the fire and chopping the wood and being up early in the morning and working throughout the whole day and really thinking about what that really would have been like. You know, when I went to West Africa, I went to Senegal, Ghana, and Nigeria so far. I'm on a West Africa binge now. And I remember the first time I saw a kitchen in the village, like one of the traditional villages in Senegal, and tears. I mean, I couldn't stop crying. Because as I said to my the people who were allowing us in, I said, I've been here before. And they understood exactly what I meant. And the Senegalese, one of the Senegalese people said to me, Michael, you are We are your new family, but you are our old family. Hmm. And so that really, you know, eating the food with them, eating the okra, eating the hot peppers, pounding fufu. And, you know, when we pounded fufu in Ghana, we went as a group of chefs to kind of like on a cooking gene tour of Ghana. And we were pounding fufu with them. And there's two dudes, me and my play brother Harold, pounding fufu, which is not a dude's job. Even though it's very hefty, you know. And we made the women smile because we started singing a song from slavery time, but we just replaced the word rice with yams. And they just started clapping on cue and singing on cue like they had always known this song. And they were smiling, and it was an immediate sort of like, we get you. You know, they said to us, welcome home. And that's just like the feeling that I want everybody to have, no matter what their background is. Anybody can have a cooking gene journey. Anybody can break down the various parts of their identity, their culture, their family story, and connect to other people around the globe.
Yeah.
You know, we might be cousins because you don't have a little South Asian. So, you know, hey, I'll bring you to the next fun reunion.
You send me the invite, I will be there.
All right. Awesome. Awesome.
Can I just ask you kind of a slight tangential question? Because, you know, you include some recipes in the book as well. West African brisket, black-eyed pea hummus, which sounds amazing. Your mom's apple crisp, right?
Right.
So how'd you decide what to include?
I wanted things that were uniquely me and my story, not just, you know, whatever. I didn't give away my grandmama Nim's fried chicken recipe because that's like gold. I don't play that. but I did put in the things that, show my Black and Jewish identity, or the things that show my emotional connection to my mom, or things that show like the hard tack of slavery, the ash cake and trough mush, you know, people used to eat from a trough. I mean, I wanted people to see that the food is not just about comfort, and that sometimes, yes, it is about comfort. It's about love. The food is our DNA.
Mm-hmm. You know, since you offered it to us like a little hidden gem there when you talked about your Black and Jewish identity, for folks who don't know your story, you want to just explain
a tiny bit. Yeah. So I'm actually going to be my next project. This book is part of a trilogy. And, you know, I'm very grateful that, you know, the Cooking Gene brought me 2 James Beard Awards, 1 Best Writing and 1 Best Book. But the next book is about my Jewish identity in Black Jewish food traditions and my relationship with Judaism. And the next book after that will center my gay identity and talk about how that relates to food. So it's like each identity will take turns being front and center, but the other parts will be there as well.
Well, Michael W. Twitty is author of the James Beard Award-winning memoir, The Cooking Gene, A Journey Through African-American Culinary History in the Old South. He'll be at the Jewish Heritage Center at New England Historic Genealogical Society tonight and the New England Center for the Arts and Technology tomorrow night. We've got information about that at radioboston.org. What a pleasure and a privilege it's been
to
speak with
you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.